It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Hey guys, welcome back to Money for Lunch. Man, is the weather getting nice? You know what? It's just an absolutely gorgeous, gorgeous day here in Gilbert, Arizona, Scottsdale, Phoenix, all over the Phoenix metro area. It is just absolutely fantastic. And you know what's interesting? I've lived in cold places like Utah and Colorado, and there, as the snow hits the ground, as the ski resorts open, the snowbirds come in. And these are people who want to get away from the snow. No, I take that back. These are people who want to get to the snow, right? They're coming from places like Phoenix that don't have snow so they can, what do you call it, ski and have a great time. So living here in Arizona, snowbirds come in, and these are people who are running away from the snow. They want to get to places that are warm and where the weather is perfect, and you don't have to shovel snow. So sometimes one word will have dual meanings. It just depends where you live, or it depends on your belief system. Now, that was my segue, or that's my setup, for my first guest, Linda McCarthy. Dr. Linda McCarthy has a PhD in metaphysical counseling and is a board-certified life strategist coach with the American Association of Drugless Practitioners. Now, one of the things that her and I have talked about in the past is sometimes having, you know, what do you call it, struggling with our own identities, our own meanings, right? That was my setup for that. Maybe not the most elegant, but that was the best I could do at the moment. Anyway, Dr. Lynn McCarthy is one of our regular contributors, and as I mentioned, she is she has a PhD in metaphysical counseling. She's also a member of the Holistic Medical Association and a co-author of the number one best-selling book, The Wellness Code. Linda is also an inspirational speaker, feature contributor to online magazines, and a winner of the Editor's Choice Award for The Wellness Code. As a life makeover expert, her passion is to show clients how their thoughts, feelings, and emotions have a profound impact on your lives, mind, body, and spirit. Linda is located in sunny Scottsdale, Arizona, but offers consultations throughout the U.S. Her website is newdirectioncoaching.com. And sometimes what we need to do is go in a new direction, don't we? Anyway, enough of that. It's always good to have Dr. Linda McCarthy here on the show. Linda, welcome back to Money for Lunch.
Thank you so much. Happy Tuesday, everyone. I like to think of Tuesday as the beginning of a four-day work week. It makes it easier.
Oh, man, that's excellent. I'm going to have to use that quote. I love it. Tuesday is the beginning of a four-day work week. Woohoo!
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about this because, you know, again, you and I have talked about creating a more authentic life.
Yes.
And let me ask you, do you think people struggle with their identity?
Gosh, you know, I think more people struggle with this than we realize. You know, it's so much easier to just slap on a mask and hide behind it. Because for years and years, you know, we've been told what we should look like, how we should live, how we should act, what we should drive to be successful. You know, I hear that all the time. I feel empty. I'm drained. I'm depleted. But the thing is, you know, Bert, it has absolutely nothing to do with what they've acquired. Because I work with financially wealthy clients. But here's the thing. Their spirit is bankrupt. You know, stuff comes and goes, but we've associated our stuff with our identity. So when you lose that, you've lost part of your identity, and that's what I'm there to do. I'm there to change that I've been told many times that I'm one of the most unconventional coaches or speakers because I don't subscribe to the go big or go home statement. You know, each person has to do what resonates with their heart, not with their head. You know, we think we have to live up to expectations of our family, our friends, our peers. So we strive to achieve a goal that might not have even been ours in the first place, but we did it because we're told that's living a dream. Well, I don't know about you, but I don't want to live someone else's dream. I want to live my own.
Absolutely. You know what? I'm glad you brought that up because I always talk about everybody being created to succeed, and then I caution or have a disclaimer that not everybody is meant to be a Donald Trump or
exactly.
You know, a Rocky, would call it Sylvester Stallone or whoever you see out there who's gone big.
Right.
I look at my father-in-law, who's really gone small. I mean, he's gotten all his kids through college, and there's so many of these unsung heroes out there. Him and his wife were married for 40 years. She passed away a couple of years ago, but they got all their kids through college, and they raised a bunch of good kids, and that was his thing. And he was one of those guys that was never... what's the word, tempted by the shiny objects that the world had to offer. So I love what you're saying there, that, you know, we get caught up on what everybody else is telling us is the American dream or what should be the American dream for ourselves, or let me rephrase that, what the dream should be for us. This is success. This is what you should do. Be a doctor, have a bunch of money, do this, do that. But if it's not us, just like your wealthy clients, at
right.
the end of the day, you're miserable. You're divorced
exactly.
three or four times.
Right, exactly. I mean, everybody defines success differently. So, you know, why try to place those expectations that you have on somebody else? I think it's unfair. I see that happen a lot with parents with their kids. You know, you've got to be a doctor. You've got to be this. You've got to be that. And actually, there was one situation where this kid was going through med school. He hated it. And he was on the golf course, and a gentleman had a heart attack. And they said, well, you're in med school, do something. And he turned around and ran. I mean, he panicked. that was not, you know, he didn't want to be there. I mean, that was his aha moment. Like, I'm not meant to be a doctor, you know?
Right. Well, let's talk about this. So what is your take? What do you think is the biggest factor in our inability to connect with who we really are or who we really want to become?
Well, you know, as I do, we live in a media-driven society. And
right.
I think ever since the advent of radio, you know, it's a company's job to convince us that we absolutely need their product or service. That's marketing 101. And I majored in marketing, so I know a lot about it. And we were told you need to control their thoughts, their desires, their ambitions, entice them to purchase the latest and greatest. Or, like now, you turn on the television and we're all told that we have some type of illness or disorder and we need this drug. You know, do you know,
right.
Within 30 seconds of sitting down in front of a television, you will slip into what's known as an alpha consciousness state. And it's the same consciousness associated with hypnosis. It's a state of hyper-suggestibility. So the other day I was watching the news because I wanted to see, I just wanted to count ads. There were 15 ads, 15, for pharmaceutical drugs telling me all the signs and the symptoms of all these diseases that I could have, and I didn't even know it, so I better talk to my doctor about getting that drug. Well, I know about, you know, alpha consciousness, so I just mute them. I don't want my subconscious to be subjected to that type of brainwashing. You know, we're a prisoner of the media, and
yep.
I think now it's time to be released. You know, we're defining our worth through our stuff.
Yeah. You know what, and I like what you're saying there. We do, I build our identities on what kind of job we have and how much materials we have accumulated.
Exactly. But that doesn't make people happier. I mean, that's what I see all the time in my practice. People come in and they have the biggest houses, the biggest boats, the most expensive cars, and they are miserable. They're defining their self-worth by their stuff.
Right, and as a society, we do it as well, too. I mean, again, I'm going to pick on Donald Trump. No disrespect to Mr. Trump. But you look at him, and a lot of people give him a lot of respect, a lot of admiration, because, quote, he has money.
Right.
But he's also
exactly.
been divorced, what, 4 or 5 times?
Right, right.
So if you dig past the shiny objects, he might be good in one area of his life, which is wealth or accumulating money, which is great. We all need money. But he's obviously not good, or he struggles with, on the more spiritual, deeper things, such as holding a relationship together.
Yes, exactly. And again, you know, everybody's different, and he may hold money or, you know, in a higher place in his life at this point. Now, maybe later that might change, but, you know, right now that's how he defines himself.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think that part of the struggle that we have is this, what do you call it, two messages that we're being fed? For instance, successful people have money on one hand, but on the other hand, we're told that things like love are really the things that count in life. But then, again, we're told, well, listen, you know, you can't pay your car bills with love. You can't build, you know, you can't retire on love. So we're constantly getting these dual messages.
Well, you know, I think ultimately, I mean, I've seen this because I've worked in hospitals and I've been with people at the end of their life. And at the end of their life, they weren't talking about how much money they left.
Right.
Either they were surrounded by people that loved them or they weren't. And so many times it was like, if I could do it over again, I would do it differently. Because really that's all that we have. That's all that we have to leave on this planet, truly. Money will come and go. But it's what remains in your heart. And I think if you love what you do, you will make money. You know, you'll make money at it. You just, everybody defines it by, you know, I hate my job, but I have to stay here because I'm making money. It's like, find
right.
something. You don't have to do it right this minute, but maybe be a little bit more authentic and find something that you may love to do. You'll make money at it. Trust me.
Now, people need to buy things, guys. So, you know, I don't want to give anybody the wrong impression. I like material goods. I like the finer things in life.
Right?
I mean, it makes us feel good. It helps the economy, right?
Exactly. But what I'm saying is pay attention to why you're doing it. You know, are you just following the popular view of the day? Do you feel inadequate if you don't have it? You know, I have friends. Good example. Just bought the latest iPhone a few months ago. Now, out comes the 5S and the 5C. Well, they have to have it. They have to have it, but they said, but I can't wait until the 6.
Right.
I was like, you don't even have the 5S yet, and you're already anticipating the 6. You know, we become addicts and enslaved to our things. So instead of us owning them, they own us.
Right. And again, that's a great example. You're right. Everybody knows somebody who has to have the latest gadget because that is part of their identity. They get attention that way, right?
Yeah, well, it feeds a need.
Yes.
It feeds a need. They had the highest 9 million, I think, sold in one day, iPhones.
Wow.
9 million. And they're coming out.
And you get to be part of that 9 million who bought that day, who waited in line. You
wow.
get the story to tell. And like you said, it feeds that need.
Exactly. No thanks. I'll pass.
Well, let's talk about this. Because I can hear this, you know, over the radio. How can people connect with their own authenticity? How can you rebuild that? What questions should they be asking themselves? Walk me through your thinking.
Sure, quickly. First, just ask yourself what really makes you happy. Because here's the thing. Most people don't even know. They don't know what makes them happy. You know, what are your dreams? Your dream could be downsizing to a more simple life. I mean, one that affords you not just more financially, but emotionally as well. Do you know that
right.
1 in 5 Americans use an antidepressant daily? So that's 20% of our population that needs a drug just to get through their day. And, I have clients that come to me, because they want to simplify their life, but they're scared to death. And when I say, what are you afraid of? They say, I'm afraid of what others will think. I'm afraid that they're going to judge me. That never right. ceases to amaze me. We're influenced by what others think, but not, but what, you know, what makes us happy. But once they do it, they said it's incredibly liberating. You know, we're all impregnated with dreams, but our dreams change. And it could be uncomfortable, but birthing usually is. You know, dreams take time right. to birth. You can't plant and harvest in the same season, but at least plant the seeds. But most of all, just don't let people step on your dreams. You know, Lisa Nichols said, some motivation comes wrapped in sandpaper. So I say, don't be afraid to scratch the surface. You might be surprised at what you find.
Absolutely. I think that the whole thing about being concerned what other people think about you, you know, guys, I think some of us struggle with that more than others. And if you're struggling with that, if you're constantly concerned about your motives for, quote, making them happy, you know, maybe you're buying the next dress or the next iPhone or you're trying to keep up with the Joneses, you know, that might be an indication you need a little bit of help. Maybe you need a little look inside, you know, whether to say a checkup from the neck up, right, Linda?
Exactly. I love that. I love that.
Yeah, so I want to say that because if you guys are listening and you're a little concerned and maybe some of these things that we talked about today resonate with you, check out Linda's website. It's newdirectioncoaching.com, newdirectioncoaching.com, and maybe going in a new direction is what you want to do. And Linda works with people literally all over the world via phone and Skype and whatever other technology. Linda, we're out of time.
Absolutely.
But always good to have you on the show. Thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you so much. Have a great week, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Guys, we're off and running. Great stuff there by Dr. Linda McCarthy. And remember, don't let them dictate you, your life. Yeah, don't let them dictate your life. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back right after this.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Rose.
And Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
This is so cool.
You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right,
it was nice.
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
Hey, guys, we are back. My next guest, there it is, Mark Torak. Mark Torak is one of the new masters of real estate investing. You can check him out at Torak, T-O-R-O-K, Law. goldrush.com. Anyway, I was saying, Mark is one of the new masters of real estate investing who has appeared on NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox affiliates throughout the country. He is a best-selling co-author of Defend and Protect, a book on how everyone can protect themselves in today's world, and he's an active real estate investor. He's been an attorney for almost 30 years and is the founder of the Torak Law Firm, a law firm dedicated to representing real estate investors and small business entrepreneurs and creating innovative, unique legal solutions for his clients in real estate securities, estate planning, and protecting and preserving their wealth and assets. Mark is an active speaker throughout the United States and has presented seminars, boot camps, and talks on real estate, asset protection, and federal and state laws, including subject to invest, lease options, contract for deed, the SAFE Act, the MARS Act, and our good friend, the Dodd-Frank Act, as well as the, is it Garn Street Act? Garn Street Germain Act, and the myths and truths about other guru programs. His newest venture is collaboration with investors around the country to provide the benefits and security of working with a large organization, yet providing individuals the benefits that can be attained through real estate. Mark Torak, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you very much, Bert. I'm
very glad to be here.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk about this. Let's talk about the state of real estate investing today. How is it out there in the marketplace?
Well, there's two schools of thought. I will tell you that I'm able to have a rather unique perspective on the market because instead of just doing one thing, I'm doing a whole bunch of things. And since we're representing a lot of real estate investors, we get to see 1,000 different deals rather than just doing one deal 1,000 times kind of thing. But today, in today's market, I think that real estate investors are being caught up in the siege that is befalling the banks because of the housing crisis. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau are putting out regulations on Dodd-Frank that are going to be very restrictive for a lot of folks, and for the first time, they're going to be subject to various federal laws. They're subject to various state laws. You've got the SAFE Act. You've got Garn St. Germain. You've got all of these laws are coming together to make things fairly difficult for real estate investors. Now, having said that, I'm a firm believer that, like your first guest, that you do make your own future, and with every problem, there are opportunities out there. So we focus with the law firm. We focus on representing real estate investors, and it's something that we take great pride in because we try and figure out how best to solve some of these problems. And I know a lot of real estate investors are getting out of the market, but those that are going to stay in the market are going to make millions.
Right. You know what? This kind of reminds me of what happened, you know, back in the, not that I was there, I think, but you read about this, back in the big crash in, what is it, 1929 or whatever, the big stock market crash. And you saw this again in 1980s, too. The people who stayed in the market are the ones who made the biggest money, right?
Absolutely. And I think it's going to be exactly the same here. People ask me, is it a good time to invest in real estate? My answer, it's a great time to invest in real estate because you get in now, and by the everything goes in cycles, obviously, that what's going to happen is that you're going to be a millionaire someday, and it really doesn't take that much to get that far, but I agree, those that keep their head about them and study and get good advice and are disciplined about it are truly going to be, they'll make more money in this market than they made in the early 2000s, where people were able to invest for appreciation. We don't have that anymore, but the people and the techniques now are long-term techniques for 30 or 40 years that will generate wealth and passive income.
I love it. Hey, I'm going to play something for you that Donald Trump, who was on a while back, so this is a little bit out of date. I think it's about 7 or 8 months old, but I want you to listen to this.
Well, the good news is there's no money around, so you're not going to have a lot of overbuilding like you do in the housing industry. You know, they overbuilt 2 years ago, and now they're sort of getting rid, and you can make lots of good deals. If you have money today, you can make lots of good deals. The fact is, this is a great time to go buy a house, maybe even...
So, aligned with what Donald Trump says there, it's a good time to get in now, and you're basically saying the same thing.
Yep. Well, yes, actually... I happen to be a friend of George Ross, Donald's
right-hand man,
lawyer kind of thing. But I agree with both George Ross and Mr. Trump that it is a great time to get into real estate. A lot of people are getting out, which is fine because I would certainly love to be the only real estate investor in the United States. I own most of the land.
Oh, man. A dream come true. You're so big in real estate that the government comes in to break you up, right?
Well, you know, it's kind of like having tax problems. If you owe the IRS $100,000, that means you've made at least that. So
right.
It'd be kind of a good problem to have to fight, wouldn't it?
It would. I can't wait till I owe the IRS like $1 million. I can't wait.
Yes,
to just,
exactly.
Boom.
Because that means I've made
well, let's
at least
talk about
three.
This. Let's talk about if you're seeing any kind of specific bright spots out there, anything that you're kind of really looking at.
Well, what's happening in today's market is that lending is very restrictive. I mean, we have the lowest interest rates practically in history, and people are still not able to buy houses. Obviously, if people can't get loans, they can't buy houses. If people can't buy houses, people can't sell houses. And if people can't sell houses, prices aren't going to go up on those houses. So we're seeing a major effect with the lending in the country. And by the way, it's going to get worse. It's going to get much worse with the regulations on Dodd-Frank. Now, granted, one set of regulations is 807 pages, and they just came out with another set of regulations that's 750 some pages. And I haven't gotten all the way through those, but lending is going to be restrictive for the very very near future, or for the foreseeable future. So the folks who have figured out how to do things are going to be the only ones in the market. So your rental market's going to continue to be strong. Residential rentals will be strong. But I think what you're going to find is something that we've been actually doing for about 30 years, and that's the buying property subject to and taking over the loans is going to be continually strong. We've done about 1,200 of these deals in the last few years. In fact, our law office won't close a deal that involves a traditional lender. We send that elsewhere. Quite frankly, life's too short to have to deal with banks.
Well, listen. I want to be able to bring you back. I'm going to, you know, because I would like to, bring you back and just do an entire segment on the whole subject, too. And what you just said, I bet everybody just kind of dropped whatever they're doing when you said life's too short to be dealing with banks. So how do you get around banks? You have a formula for that is what I guess I'm hearing from you.
Yeah, we do. Essentially, we're out there, and our new venture is out there. We've got what we call acquisition specialists all over the country, who are talking with sellers who want to sell their house, but because people can't buy their house because they can't get loans, we have come up with a process where we buy their property, we pay them their equity over time, if they have any, but we take over their loan. Now, it used to be, and other gurus will teach you, you know, you hide things and you do that. We don't do that at all. In fact, we have a very specific letter that we send to the bank that says, this is what we're going to do, and if you object, let us know. Well, out of 1,200 transactions, we've had two banks object. So the banks are aware of this, and actually it's been around since, I understand, the 1930s, although I wasn't alive in the 1930s, but I did start my career in the late 70s and early 80s when interest rates were 17 and 18%. So it became more fashionable back in the 1982, 1983, and it was actually codified in Garnes-Saint-Germain by the federal government as a technique to use. Very few people tend to use the technique, but basically you take over their payments on the loan, they become a lender to you on the property, and you continue to make the payments, you turn around and sell it to someone else on what's known as a wraparound loan. And it's very interesting how the numbers work out because I'll tell you this, if you are able to sell the house for, let's say, $5,000 down, and your spread is $250 a month more than what you have to pay out. In other words, if you have to pay out $750 on the loan that you've taken over, and you turn around and sell it for perhaps, you know, a couple of interest points higher, maybe six.
Right.
Eight.
So now you're making $1,000.
Now you're making $1,000. That spread, that $250 spread, if you do buy and sell one house a month, at the end of 3 years, your passive income is $108,000 off of your properties. You've only bought 36.
I love it. Listen, we're out of time, Mark, but I want to bring you
back
and really dive into the subject matter more. Would you be up for that?
Absolutely. Just
all
let
right.
me know when.
Mark Torak, check him out at thetoraklaw.com, TORO law.com. Mark, thanks so much for stopping by and sharing.
My pleasure. Thank you, Bert.
All righty, guys. We are off and running. Great stuff there by Mark Torak. Interesting way to have passive income. And really, you're not taking on a lot of risk, and I'm sure we're going to explain that next time Mark comes up. So Amy will get a hold of Mark and get that going. Hey, speaking of money, what would you do if money wasn't an object? My next guest, Brad Wyman, he's the COO of Fund Anything, is going to be joining us in about, 2 minutes, as soon as we're done with this commercial break.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler, Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
Hey, guys, we are back. My next guest, Brad Wyman. And Brad Wyman is a return guest, and he's the COO of a company called FundAnything.com. Speaking of Donald Trump has something to do with this company. He'll explain that too. But let me tell you a little bit more about Brad Wyman. Brad Wyman, as I mentioned earlier, COO of FundAnything.com. He's also a producer of over 40 feature films. He is one of the most prolific and successful producers of independent films in Hollywood with over 30 features to his credit. Wyman has worked with an impressive roster of A-list talent, including Charlize Theron, Reese Witherspoon, Matthew McConaughey, Christina Ricci. His impressive 25-year career boasts the indie blockbuster movie called Monster, the Patty Jenkins film that earned Charlize Theron an Academy Award for Best Actress, and it is really a riveting, riveting movie. Brad Wyman, welcome back to Money for Lunch.
Damn, you do that well. I mean, I gotta have you following me around. I mean, and saying, this is Brad Wyman, because, I mean, I would get into every club, every door, you know, every office. I mean, that was amazing. Thank you for that lovely introduction.
Well, all right. Well, I appreciate it. And I appreciate you coming back, and I want to talk about Fund Anything. Let me tell you, we had a couple of people who heard the show, and they immediately said, we want Brad Wyman back. They're over there at FundAnything.com, and they wanted some specific, I guess, strategies, if you will. So we had a couple of people who are already actively campaigning or fundraising or crowdfunding there at FundAnything.com. And so here are a couple of questions for you.
Go.
Are there campaigns that do better than others?
No.
Really?
Yep. Let me tell you what we learn daily, because this is a brand new art. Raising money for financing projects online is brand new. We are in the birth of it. So we learn things every day. We used to gauge how well a project did by how big your social is, how big your Facebook is, how big your Twitter is. Let me tell you what a key to success is. Email lists. Do you believe that? I mean, in this world of social networking and Facebooking and Twittering and LinkedIn and Google Plusing, that an email is still the most effective way to reach out somebody with your campaign.
So you start there with the grassroots, people that you know. You're going to send them an email and say, hey, here's what I'm doing at fundanything.com. Help me out.
Forget about people that you don't know, people that you can acquire lists that would be interested in your topic. You know, if you somehow can find people that are interested in the green space, if you have a green project, and they'll give you an email blast, or if you can find horror movie lovers, if you're trying to do horror movies, it doesn't have to be just your friends and family on your email lists. Right now, you know, we have a campaign rocking on our site, and everyone says, yeah, he's a celebrity. Yeah, it's Penn and Teller. But Penn had, you know, just a couple magic associations send out some blasts. Really weak email list, actually, you know, but he's so popular and loved. It was getting the word out in the most direct message way. Why? Because an email sits in your inbox. If it's an email from somebody that's somebody there, they'll click it. If it's written well and doesn't look like spam, people will read it. You know, that is the best still way to get a response. Collect email lists. People go, well, how do you collect emails? Well, you know, I mean, every business card you ever grab now, start inputting. I mean, this is starting, but this is your D2C. This is direct to consumer.
Right.
You know, this is how we're financing stuff. Now,
right,
I'm not,
and you know what? And you can also go to places like LinkedIn, where you'll find movie producers if you're trying to raise money for a movie. Or maybe you can go to some place like Facebook and become more socially, what do you call it, motivated, or what do you call it, interactive when you're pulling at heartstrings. Hey, I'm trying to raise money for my husband kidney.
Sure.
I see this on fundanything.com.
I know no one wants to spend money, but I think to be a email priority on LinkedIn, meaning you get the person's email, you know, if you're LinkedIn, I think it's like $6.99 a month or something, you know, if you're trying to raise money, that might be a worthwhile investment. And by the way, you can gather emails through Facebook, you know, hey, everybody who's interested in this kind of project, this is before you launch, this is pre-launch, and write a little thing about your project and saying you want to get a free video about it, or, you know, always give them a carrot, you know, email me this and just create a little landing page and collect emails that way. It's so funny. I just go on and on about this. It's just because we're proving this data-wise. Now, by the way, next month or next week, there might be a better way. It might be just Facebook. It might be just Twitter, you know, or it might be some site we don't even know about. You know, but right now, you know, everybody, you know, thinks this and this and this and this and build this and this and this. I want anybody who wants to have a big career in crowdfunding, start collecting their emails and building it. This is your direct consumer base. If you have a 10,000 base and you're trying to raise money, you do the math. You know, if you get 10,000 people times 50, how much money is that? You know, $500,000.
Right. Now, let me ask you this. Okay, so let's say that I'm trying to raise $100,000 and I only raised $25,000. So does that mean my campaign is canceled, or do I get the $25,000?
You get the $25,000 on our site. The way our site works is that there's a 5% fee if you hit your goal. If you miss your goal, we actually have a 9% fee. Why
gotcha.
Do we take more if you fail? We don't want you to fail. We're incentivizing you to win.
Right.
Now,
I love
you it. You have to build your campaigns, though, if they're flexible, that you deliver the rewards. So if the money you raise, you know, is $25,000 and you've offered somebody, you know, a finished 3D printer, you know, and you can't, you know, deliver that, you've just ruined your entire engagement and you can't make it. And you can't, you have to deliver your rewards is the key. You know, if you don't deliver your rewards, no matter what size price your budget is or how much you raise, then you are no longer going to have a trusting direct-to-consumer engagement. So a lot of films, I say, hey, you can't offer, if I'm film's obviously my background, you can't offer to finish screening in someone's home until you hit your goal, you know? If you need that, you just can't. You can still offer T-shirts, script readings, you know, casting session, website updates, you know, all the things that don't require a finished product. So we'll
right.
work with you on campaign management, you know?
All right, so let me ask you this. You mentioned Penn from Penn and Teller. Here's a guy who's fairly famous. You see him on TV all the time. He has his own specials. He's got a very successful career. Why is he crowdfunding?
I thought this was for guys who didn't have money. Well, you know, I don't think anyone expects anyone to finance their own movies or, you know, their own films or their own real estate ventures, you know,
right.
raising money for your dreams. You know, I don't think it has to do with, you know, wealth. That's probably why somebody can own a house. They haven't funded all of their ideas. But, you know, I had this conversation with Penn, and you know, he was really, really interesting about it. He goes, you know, Brad, I'm a magician, you know. I'm like considered the fluffy teddy bear magician for the silent guy, you know. kids hug me in airports, you know, and, you know, there's a lot of sides to me, a lot of things, and, you know, I wrote, you know, a really scary horror film that I really love, or thriller, as he called it, you know, and I want to play the villain, you know, and nobody says, not only should I do it, my agents and reps, you know, here's another, you know, cameo in a Will Smith movie as a fluffy magician, you know,
Nobody
wants me to play the part. Everyone's passed on the script in Hollywood. All the gatekeepers don't get it. He goes, you know, and you're an artist. I mean, any way you look at it, I don't care if you're successful or not, you sit in a dark room all by yourself and you write something, you know, and you write something that you really believe in and you think's really great. Now everybody's told you no for years. Can't be done, wrong thing. He goes, you know what? You wonder if they're right or wrong. And finally, I just decided, let the crowd decide. Let the people decide. I trust them more than I trust the Hollywood gatekeepers. You know, I want to see if the people want to see this movie. And if they want to make this movie, I want to make it for them. I don't know if that answers the question, but that's why he's doing it.
It does. It does. You know, and it goes to show you that, again, here's somebody who's got money, who's successful, but yet he cannot get a movie done, quote, in the traditional way. And if it wasn't for something like fundanything.com and crowdfunding, it probably never get done.
Oh, it wouldn't. I mean, look, it's a wonderful opportunity for everybody. And Penn said this as well. He said, look, you know, I really believe in this democratization of finance. You know, I really believe it shouldn't be up to five venture people or, you know, three bankers or seven studio heads on what gets anyone. And he says, if my campaign, you know, brings any light to anyone that has a dream, that believes in their dream, and just doesn't want to take no for an answer and wants to test it, here's an opportunity. You know, put it up. You know, put up your store online on fundanything.com and see if people like your idea. And by the way, as a testing brand grand alone, it's a great idea. Well, maybe it wasn't the wrong idea. Maybe it was
right.
the right idea. You know?
I love it. All right, so let me ask you this. Here's one of the guys who contacted me. His name is Daryl Mitchell. He is trying to put a grocery store back in his town of Robbins. He lives in Robbins is a suburb of Chicago. I think Amy sent this to you, and I don't know if you had a chance to look at it. But he's raising $50,000. That's what he needs to do something with the land or something. He's raised $315 thus far. So if you were going to give him advice, obviously you already said, contact people via email. That's your number one source. Anything else that he can do to try to raise awareness to his campaign?
Well, this is a real community project, you know. And it, by the way, this is great for community projects. But, you know, you probably won't have as much luck getting money from someone in Maine or North Dakota, you know, as you would for someone who would be interested in doing this in that area. And so I look at this more like a mayor campaign or running for, you know, in your area. So really there's your database. I mean, that's what we have to find. And we have to find them on Facebook. We have to find them through real estate people in the area that will help us send out those emails to people. We try to get some local press. You know, we try to draw people to the page. And I haven't looked at the page yet, so pardon me, but I surely will the moment I have a second. You know, there's some things that, you know, you want to make sure are on your page. Make sure you have a compelling pitch video. Use your iPhone. I just want authentic. You know, I don't need Star Wars. But, you know, they're backing you. You know, they're backing you. So, I mean, you're the candidate. You know, you have to present yourself. And then, by the way, look, if we call our page a store, right, and he's funding the store too, you're giving rewards. You're not giving any equity away, so you're giving rewards.
Right.
So make sure you got a good store. You know what? What can somebody get for their $5 contribution? You know, I had one lady who was, and unfortunately I couldn't convince her, who was determined to sell her workout DVD set for $100.
Wow.
I said, who's going to buy it? I mean, literally, who's going to buy it? I'm not. You know, you can get downloads for $6.99, and, you know, you can get Star Wars, going back to that, you know, and Blockbuster for $9.99.
Absolutely.
You know, so have good stuff. Have priced T-shirts. Have stickers. Let people get coupons to when the store opens or get their names printed on the shopping bags or, you know, or whatever they want, you know, that would entice someone to do it. Because there's one thing getting people to your page, but the next thing is, you know, excite them by having things that they can purchase that makes sense.
Hey, Brad, we're out of time. Thank you so much for stopping by. I'm going to bring you back again in a few months, and we'll talk about some other stuff happening at FunAnything.com.
I love it. Thank you for having me. Anytime. If I can teach anybody how to raise money online and get their dreams come true, it's just a joy. Thank you, sir.
You bet. Brad Wyman, everybody, you can check him out at FundAnything.com. He is the CEO there, and FundAnything.com is a I forgot to bring this up. It's a partnership or partly owned by Trump and his people. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back speaking with David Kassir right after this.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler, Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on Geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
Hey, guys, we're back. David Kassir, investment advisor. David Kassir is from Washington, D.C., leading financial advisor and managing principal of Mana Capital Management. David Kassir, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Hi, Brad. How are you?
Good. How are you doing,
man? Thanks for having me.
You bet.
All right, so
I'm going to dive right into this.
Okay.
All right, so you're well known for saying what gets measured gets mastered. Walk me through this.
I am. Essentially, what we found is that, you know, a lot of the people that we work with on a day-to-day basis are so busy with life, so busy doing whatever it is they're doing, that oftentimes they leave their financial lives in somewhat of a disarray in regards to kind of not having things in the right order, not having structure towards that part of their life, and then they find themselves a few years later short on a lot of things that they've wanted to do, they've wanted to build up to do, and it's just and this has been kind of an area that we've kind of drilled into our clients' minds with regards to what gets measured, gets mastered, and using the tools that are available to us in this day and age to be able to monitor our investments, to be able to analyze certain things, to have tools in place so that when they work with a trusted advisor, that person sits right next to them and kind of walks through them with this application, you know. So there's just an abundance of things out there. It's just unfortunately most people are just not aware of these tools.
Gotcha. Let me ask you this, because I find this a little almost contradictory. Here you are. You are a leading financial advisor, but you're against using the word budget. Why is that?
You know, the word budget, it's kind of like the word diet. It's very restrictive. It's, even for myself personally, I'll just tell you from personal experience that I've been in the financial planning field for close to about 20 years. But even when I hear the word budget, I tend to shirk at that, only because it's just something that doesn't work well with me. Now, how can I be able to adhere to certain things, certain disciplines, all the while being on a budget? And again, this goes back to item number one, what gets measured gets mastered. For example, I'll share one of the ideas that we work with a lot of our clients in using is a tool called Mint.com, which is a phenomenal free website developed by Intuit. And what's great about this is that it almost makes it fun. It almost makes it challenging, and it turns what we perceive as a budget into a game. And it kind of becomes somewhat addictive in the sense that you're trying to beat the previous month's spending goal on whether it's dining, groceries, gasoline, whatever the case may be. They've got all these colorful charts, and that's kind of one of the tools that we use to help clients not only measure everything, but also become masters at everything with regards to their financial lives. And before they know it, they're easily and effortlessly budgeting things in their life. But again, they didn't. If we were to do it by pen and pencil, I don't think those effects would have been as robust, you know. So yes,
gotcha.
Going
and,
back.
And
to
what's the website again?
Mint.com.
Mint.com.
It's a phenomenal free tool for anyone, whether they're working with an advisor, whether they're not working with an advisor. It's a fairly robust engine. It's fairly secure. We've used it. We've gotten a lot of our clients on it only because whenever we meet with clients side by side, we'll pull up their Mint.com profile. We'll set up all of their accounts, their real estate, credit cards, everything. With an impress of a button, we have the ability to see their entire picture, you know. And that financial picture is updated minute by minute on a daily basis. So it is pretty nice, you know. That's the beauty of the technology that's available to us in this day and age.
Kind of like Weight Watchers for your wallet.
You know what? Ironically, I am on Weight Watchers, and it works. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Because it's being measured,
it's just,
right?
Same premise, you know, exactly.
I love it. Let me ask you this, David. I would love to get your thought on this. We are a very wealthy nation in general. We are taught that one of the dreams that we should all aspire to is to have some kind of wealth, right? Money is one of those things that sets you apart from the non-successful. If you have a lot of money, you're automatically a successful person. But at the same time, it seems like our society has a lot of hang-ups when it comes to money, right? I mean, we're afraid to ask people for money when they owe us money. you know, we're afraid to ask people for, what do you call it, the price that we want on something. And so a lot of people walk around broke.
Mm. Yes.
So what's your take on that?
Yeah. No, I mean, it's very true. I mean, essentially what we find is that, when we build that muscle, you know, it's like anything else in life, you know, there's certain disciplines, habits that create certain outcomes at the end of our lives. And, you know, and really these outcomes at the end of our lives are a series of habits while we are in life. And depending on what habits we've got, whether it's a savings habit, whether it's a exercise habit, all these things quantify to a certain result in the last days of our lives. And this brings me back to savings, basically, which is kind of the most understated, unsexy thing that most people have to develop. Unfortunately, saving money is just not sexy. It's not appealing. You know,
right.
The whole premise of financial independence follows from thrift. You know, so it's essentially the deferral of gratification. And consumption in this day and age with most people, they get an immediate emotional payback, you know, so that far and exceeds them putting money away. And that's where I think working with a coach of some sort, working with a trusted advisor, someone that can stay on top of those people to help them mind their goals, to measure their goals on a daily or monthly basis or what have you. But it actually ends up feeling pretty good when someone can look back a year later and realize that life didn't change all that much, and they saved $100,000, or whatever the sum of money may be. You know,
right? And let me tell you, if you save $50,000 or $100,000 or $10,000, that's pretty dang sexy at the end of the day, though, isn't it, David?
It's a feeling I can't even begin to explain to you. Because when you don't have money and you don't have the ability to save, you will never, ever, ever be wealthy. That's just the bottom line. And in the absence of savings is what? Credit. Banks understand the human psychology. Banks understand that we are weak as human beings and we're not going to save by and large. So they'll extend us credit, you know, so we're at the mercy of the banks. And
we're out of time, but this is why the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. If you can't save, you can't develop wealth, and if you can't develop a savings account, you're always behind the eight ball. If your car breaks down, you got to get credit to fix it. You got to get credit to help to get a house. You got to get credit just to get your kids in school. You're constantly at the mercy of somebody else.
That's 100%. So, I mean, regardless of whatever Wall Street wants to label it, whether it's retirement planning, college savings, I don't care what you call it. At the end of the day, the fundamental truth is discipline to save. If you have the discipline to save, you will be able to do anything you want in your life. That's just the bottom line. So,
and we'll end on that, David. I think that's a great way to end it. If you have the discipline to save, you'll be able to do whatever you want with your life. David Cassier, check him out at ManaCapitalManagement.com. David, love to bring you back and talk some more.
Thanks, Brad. Have a good one.
All righty. Bye-bye. Guys, we're off and running. We're going to take a very short break, and then we're going to be right back. Right after this, we're going to be speaking with Dara Fischetti about you and your fitness.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Rose.
And Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
It's just so cool.
You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right,
it was nice.
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
In Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
Hey, guys, we are back. My next guest, Dara Fischetti, health and fitness expert. She's a creator of Supergirl Fitness. I can't wait to talk to Supergirl Dara Fischetti. Welcome to Money for Lunch.
Hi, thank you for having me.
All right, so what the heck is Supergirl Fitness?
Supergirl Fitness is something I created. Well, I had gone through a lot of change in my life. I had come to a point where I was going through a divorce. I had to move out of my home. I had to start a new business. So basically, one of my very good friends kept calling me Supergirl. You're Supergirl. Look how much you're doing in such a short amount of time. And I was thinking, you know what? That sounds good. That sounds powerful. And when I sat down and to name this creation, my business, my passion, when I sat down, I was like, you know what? Supergirl Fitness. Because now you can get super fit with Supergirl.
I love it. I love it. Now, let me ask you, is this only for girls that are already fit and want to go to the next level, or can you take somebody who's out of shape? Walk me through supergirlfit.com.
Okay, so I love that question because a lot of people are thrown off by the name. They think it's just for women. But about 60% of my clients are men. I am the Supergirl. You don't have to become the Supergirl. You can become the super guy.
Gotcha. So my coach is the Supergirl, and I can still be a super guy.
Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, it's all about what you want. When people come to me, I go through a long evaluation, finding out what they really want. Do they really want the six-pack abs? No, not everybody. Some people just want to get moving. Some people want to lose weight. Some people really want to add some muscle. I have a lot of men that want to add muscle. And, you know, I'd love to inspire them to lift a little bit more weight, get in there, sweat. You know, it's fun. I love what I do.
Well, I love your passion and your energy about it. All right, so I'm looking at your bio, and at one point, and you didn't mention this, you were a stunt woman.
Yes, I was. I was a stunt woman for 14 years, and it was awesome. I actually was a dancer and a singer before that, and then I transitioned into stunts. I don't know how that – well, that was – but it was a strange transition, but it seemed totally natural at the time, and
right.
I loved it. Basically, I got paid – play fight. You know when you were a kid and you'd throw some punches and you'd make the sound effects? Well, I was
right,
doing
right.
that, and there were real sound effects, and it was awesome. It was so much fun. And then, those were some of the best years of my life, but also some of the hardest. It's hard, physically.
Sure,
mentally.
Sure. All right, so let's talk about this.
Yeah.
Here you are, you're a Supergirl, you former stunt woman, extremely fit. I want your opinion on this. What do you consider to be the first step in health and fitness?
Well, the first step in health and fitness, the first thing I ask my clients when they're ready, when they come to me and with me as well, is your decision to take care of yourself, your decision to make yourself a priority, to stop putting everybody else before you, to make some time to schedule times when you're going to take care of yourself. And then why? Why do you want to do that? Why do you want to feel better? Why do you want to become a little bit more leaner? Why do you want to lose some body fat? Why do you want flexibility? So it's more of a mindset. It comes at first, I think, from inside, from your heart, from your mind, to love yourself and say, it's time to make myself a priority and make my health a priority. That's the first step.
All right, so let me ask you this. Do you find that what you describe is sometimes, or more often than not, female-related? And what I mean by this is that women in general tend to put themselves last. I see this with my wife. I had a literally, nag her to start putting herself first because ultimately – if she's, miserable, if she's not energetic, if she's not in shape, she doesn't have energy for our five kids.
That is my, you know what, that is one of my biggest, that I get on my soapbox about this, because I have these women that come to me that are these martyrs that are like, oh, I have to give it all and give it all, give it all. I'm like, well, what happens when you have no more to give? What happens
right.
when you want to take care of everyone, but you've ended up in the hospital because you're sick? Like, they don't think like that. They, well, as women were taught, and maybe not as much nowadays, but when I was growing up, it was all about, like, take care of the man, take care of the children, take
right.
care of everyone else, you know? It's okay if you neglect yourself. That's what you're supposed to do anyway, and that kind of puts you at a better, I don't know. I think you actually, they get some identity from that, from being the one that gives all. But, you know, eventually that runs out. Eventually your energy, your health, your mental well-being is gone. And then you're just either grouchy at the least or sick at the worst, you know, where
right.
you can't.
Well,
you can't.
And let me tell you guys, here's the way I look at it. And, I, you know, again, you were divorced. I want your opinion on this as well. So marriage is a 50-50 success rate. 50% of us are going to get divorced when we get married. That's just the reality.
Right.
I think that marriage is a great institution. But check this out, ladies. If you put yourself last and your marriage goes south, the first thing you're going to do is get in the gym and get yourself in shape, because you know that's what it takes to make yourself feel good, to raise your confidence. Also, if you're going to get back into dating, eventually all women get in shape before they start dating again. So,
you know, yeah.
Stay there. Get in shape. It's just part of it. I mean, let me tell you, if you want to have more romantic evenings, if you want your husband to continue to date you after you get married, stay in shape. Demand your own time,
yeah,
right?
They don't make that correlation. They don't understand that taking care of themselves is, in fact, taking care of your husband. you know, because you want someone on your arm that takes care of themselves, that looks, that has confidence. And a lot of my favorite clients are divorcees that have gone through hell, forgot about themselves, and now, you know, they've kind of worked that strength up. They got to start taking care of themselves. And they begin to see, like, how that creates such a positive chain reaction in their life. To their closest, people closest to them, you know, their family,
right.
their friends, their spouses, and yeah, sadly that does happen. That happens a lot where women they kind of forget about that. They think it's all about the logistics, running the house, getting the kids off to school, feeding everybody, and then collapsing into bed at night. And that's not what it's about. It's not.
And let me tell you. This is just me. This is my opinion, but I think most guys would share this opinion. I much rather have a hot wife who takes care of herself in a dirty home than the reverse.
Well, let me correct you on that just a little bit. I don't mean to. See, what happens is women go hot. Well, what do I have to be? I'm not going to have the six pack abs. I just had a kid. I'm not going to.
Right.
It's not so much hot. Okay. It's more. Confidence. It's more like, are you happy in your own skin? Do you at least feel good about yourself enough? And if I can talk frankly, enough to get naked in front of your husband. So many women don't even want anyone to touch them or hold them.
See,
because
them, right.
they don't like their own bodies. They really don't.
Right.
You know.
And so, guys. So yeah. And I agree with everything you just said. So emphasize that a little bit more. No, expand that a little bit more. So I don't mean hot as in skinny and model-like.
Right.
I mean hot as whatever hot is for your body type. If you've had one or two or five kids, again, you're probably not going to have a six-pack. The six-pack is not for everybody, because most bodies have to really bust their butt for a year or two to get a six-pack. I mean, that's a different quality of eating and working out. I'm talking about in the gym two or three times, four times a week, 20 or 30 minutes at a time. I'm talking about eating right. I'm talking about, as you just said, feeling confident and sexy enough to take your clothes off in front of your spouse.
Right, right. I remember I was going through a hard time. I mean, I went through a lot of self-esteem issues when I was married. And one of the things that has stuck with me, I still keep it, my ex-husband put it was a quote from Sophia Loren, and he stuck it to my mirror, and it said, "Nothing makes a woman more beautiful than the belief that she is. And
nice.
I thought, you know, when you think you're beautiful, when you know, or when you know, when you embody that, when you know you take these steps to take care of yourself, beautiful and beautiful from the inside out and beautiful because that's the best you can be, not compared to magazines, because I'm glad you said that you're not, you know, wanting that skinny model. That's what I think most women think, and they think that's so unachievable, so they don't even make one step. So when you realize that the beauty comes from the very best that you can be, the very best that you project, and a love of yourself because you know you're taking care of yourself, that shines to everybody.
Yes.
And it
Absolutely.
Makes you feel good. And that's when you want affection. You're like, yeah, what I got is hot. Come love me.
I love it. Hey, we're out of time, but it was good to have you on the show. I want to give out your website. It's supergirlfit.com. Have the supergirl get you in shape. Check her out at supergirlfit.com. Dara Fischetti, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you for having me. Hope you have a great day.
You too. Guys, we're done. We're wrapping it up. Remember, just do your best and forget the rest. That's a Tony Horton's quote. And the more I do in life, the more that quote makes sense. It's not about what everybody else thinks. It's about what you think. We love you and we appreciate you here, and we'll see you here tomorrow.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.